Time right now for the Media Beat with David Terachuk. David, of course, joins us every Friday morning. He has his own terrific website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And we really count even more than ever on David in situations like this. It doesn't happen all the time, but it's happening now. David has covered enough war zones and conflict zones where he really has an understanding of what's going on. And, of course, we have that going on in the Ukraine right now. Good morning, David. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm glad to be reporting in again from the media capital of the world, New York City, for the last time before an extended tour in Europe coming up very soon. And I'm glad, as ever, to be talking with the man who's always alert wherever he is, Marshall Miles. Yes, I guess war dominates the news this week, as ever.
Yep.
As ever over the last 6 weeks, at least.
You know, it's going to be interesting to speak to you while you're in Europe, just to get the feel of what's going on there. But just a latest incidents and how bad things are going for the Russians, especially in the war of public opinion. Once again, a missile struck a train station where people were all going to evacuate in eastern Ukraine. And right off the bat, at least 30 dead, 100 injured. Again, just another of so many black marks against Russia. It's amazing, David.
Sure, the news from the battlefields, you can scarcely call them that, really. Perhaps massacre fields is a better description. It's all getting more and more horrific. This week we had, of course, the Russian withdrawal from around Kyiv and northward, revealing what atrocities the Russian forces have been committing in territory that they previously held. And as you say, right now, the imagery is still being verified. Journalists working hard to get a grip on what the pictures from the Russian attack, very evidently a Russian attack on the Kramatorsk train station in the east of Ukraine. Obviously a civilian target. It's a railway station. The Ukrainian government has been very volubly telling people in the east that if they want to get out of the line of fire, because a Russian push on the east is now very fully expected, then they should be making their escape. And the best way to make their escape is by train. A very full train station at Kramatorsk is offering up now these terrible, terrible pictures of quite obviously civilian people, plain clothing, lying evidently dead amongst their baggage. It's just appalling. And of course, it comes hard on the heels of the small community of Bucha, north of Kyiv, showing all those bodies, you'll recall, with horror, I'm sure, just lying in the street. And President Zelensky has been saying that the nearby town, or not too distant, Borodyanka, is offering up just as bad, or he's saying more dreadful, is his phrase, scenes of death and destruction there, more dreadful than Bucha. But the case of Bucha is interesting for the verification process. Verifying what those photographs indicated. It's so important for reporting of the war and intelligence assessments of it, too. This verification process owes a great deal to a communications phenomenon, which I think we should be talking about on the media beat, that's only existed for the last couple of decades. It's only in that time that satellite imaging from space by private companies has taken hold in the world's media scape. Previously, of course, satellites were public national ventures. I mean, NASA in this country, of course, but also the Soviet Union's space program, eventually the Russian Federation, and, of course, the European Union and China, too, in later times. But But increasingly now, just in these last two decades, so 20 years or so, it's been private commercial companies who are combing the earth from satellites with super high-resolution cameras. And this week, the camera work of one company in particular, I'll single out Maxar Technologies, which is based in Colorado and Virginia. They provided concrete visual evidence of the bodies in Bucha having been left lying on the streets from dates in the middle of March, very clearly, and well substantiated by date on the timeline. That was, of course, significantly and incontrovertibly during the Russians' occupation of the town. And this, of course, directly rebuts the claim in Russian propaganda that those individuals lying in the street were killed after Russian troops left. A preposterous claim. Perhaps even more preposterous has been their attempt to claim that the bodies were placed there by Ukrainians themselves as a propaganda trick. The evidence, well-proven evidence from those eyes in the sky, decisive in this particular case. And there are many companies besides Maxar providing this kind of intelligence material to their clients. Their clients include the businesses who are, you know, interested in the risk assessment of countries that they might want to get involved in. But also, more and more, these companies are selling to national intelligence services. In the case of the Ukraine intelligence, at a space conference just a few days ago, this week, the Biden administration's principal director of national intelligence, Stacey Dixon, she let it be known that the government asked specifically for these companies' help in, the phrase she used was shedding a light on what Russia is doing in Ukraine. And you know who you are, she said to this audience of company representatives at that conference. As my colleague at the media beat, Jess Burke, has been finding out, the Maxar company already had a government contract dating back a couple of years, as do many other smaller companies like Hawkeye 360. What a name, and pretty resonant name, don't you think, for a company created only 7 years ago, doing this job of spying from the sky or from above the sky. As well, inevitably, as long-established big companies like Lockheed Martin. There are enough of them now working for the U.S. government under contract and now being publicly spotlighted by this high-prominence, high-profile work that's being seen everywhere now, that really quite serious concern is being raised within their own ranks, as evidenced in the industry's trade publication, a digital publication, of course, Defense One, that these companies could well become targets for this country's enemies, the West's enemies. It's a civilian operation going on, but perhaps now in need of military protection.
It's interesting when we talk about drones. I saw on the BBC a very interesting report that not only are they using these million-dollar drones and these other drones, but the Ukrainian army has a section of people with private drones, even smaller, the tiny drones that have cameras on them, and they've outfitted them. So these non-military people, just regular citizens, now are part of a drone force, and those drones are also used. They're very hard for Russians to track because they're so tiny, but they give the same accuracy to the Ukrainian army when they find Russian tanks and armor hiding in the woods to blow them up. It's I think this war has changed the way we will look at a country like Russia that has such a massive ground force to invade the countries around it. It's just not as effective anymore with all the technology that's out there to defeat you. It's pretty amazing. And David, I want your your opinion of this. A Kremlin spokesman, not just a spokesman, but the presidential press secretary, Dmitry Peskov, made the following statement. Russia has suffered significant losses, calling the Ukraine invasion a huge tragedy for the forces of Russia. Do you think finally people at home, mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters, are finding out exactly what this death toll is?
Well, I think the actual number is never going to be known, but it is remarkable that such a high-ranking official should make that admission and describe it as a tragedy. Of course, in war and always, indeed, high officials are duty-bound to express regret over death of their own people, and that was what was going on here. But within the propaganda fight that's going on, and it is always true that one side will minimize the damage that they may be suffering in human terms as well as property terms, and also in all likelihood exaggerate the effect they're having on their enemies. But to be so public about it, and for this to be coming from the personage of as you say, a top Kremlin official, very close to Vladimir Putin, is remarkable. And how much the Russian public as a whole registering the size of the setbacks that Russia has been experiencing and now to some degree admitting in public is of course hard to tell. Measuring Russian public opinion is never an easy task at the best of times, and now of course it's a horrible, crude metaphor to use, but with all guns blazing on the propaganda front, it's very hard to know what people are actually thinking in their own homes. Though I'm sure the reality in a military family will be very, very clear that this is an operation that may have been intended as a swift one, is clearly getting an operation that's getting very seriously bogged down. Even though now we see tactical moves taking place in not exactly a pause in the operation, but certainly it is an opportunity for regrouping that's going on. But the overall cumbersomeness, I suppose, of the Russian military force that you refer to is clearly being demonstrated here. And in opposition, you have this much more agile, very small by comparison, but very agile force on the Ukrainian side, and particular weapons that they have, in a way, the drones you were referring to just now are exemplary of that. They're so small, in fact, that they can be folded up and put in a soldier's backpack or a civilian's backpack, for that matter. And many of the people who are, in a sense, a territorial backup force of civilians, are able to employ them, and they plug in very neatly, remotely, of course, into the army's, the Ukrainian army's information network. The information can be encrypted and form part of the really quite sophisticated pattern of communications that the Ukrainians have set up and are able, therefore, to hunt down Russian tanks, which are big and offensive bits of machinery though they are. They're still vulnerable to the weaponry that is at the Ukrainians' disposal now, not least of all, of course, the American Javelin anti-tank missiles, which are critical to the form of warfare that the Ukrainians have adopted, inevitably would adopt, what the military people themselves call mission-led operations, as opposed to the top-down command structure that the Russians are apparently stuck with ever since, I guess, the last very evident but one of the most prominent examples, of course, was the way that they rolled into Czechoslovakia as the Soviet Union Armed Forces, the Red Army, in 1968. But yes, the contrast is very clear, and it's getting clearer, you know, day by day as the operations go on. That's not to say that there's any strong chance that Ukraine can win this contest, but they can certainly. They've shown every capability and every intention of holding the Russians to some kind of stalemate that can force peace talks eventually.
You know, it's interesting. You pointed out the communications that they're using, and that's another thing. All these private companies are now monitoring Russian soldiers on their cell phones and releasing that information to the general public. Russia's communication network in the Ukraine is simply abysmal on a military level.
Absolutely. Very, very poorly protected. never really tested in the field of... certainly not in the field of street by street urban fighting, and the weakness has been demonstrated. But of course, you know, if you want to lay siege to a city and use your long range artillery and air power to bludgeon that city, you're going to have the advantage of you know, massive destruction. Which is what has been happening in the east and the south, but as I say, the Ukrainians might be able to, despite suffering and by offering their agility in response, they can exert a lot more damage than the Russians certainly ever expected, and are certainly something that they simply weren't. Fully prepared for at all.
Well, let's move away from the Ukraine and go to a story that is a feel-good story, even though getting to the feel-good portion of it was not so feel-good, and that is the historic confirmation of a black female American to join the Supreme Court.
First time in 233 years, yes. Something to note and applaud, and that's what's going on in much of American media, perhaps put aside certain outlets. Fox News, for instance, hasn't been creating a lot of hullabaloo about it, but there's no surprise there. I don't want to minimize the importance. Ketanji Brown Jackson, as a justice is an extraordinary accomplishment for black women in particular, and for the principle overall of diversity throughout our national institutions. It's not, however, going to change the balance of the Supreme Court itself. I mean, she's replacing Stephen Breyer, who was already in the liberal camp very firmly. It's an extraordinary step in itself, and well worth marking out and making it very clear what its historical importance is. As I rather sneakily alluded to, Fox News is not celebrating it, but that makes me think of an extraordinary piece of academic research. That's been published this week. It was conducted 2 years ago, so during the Trump era. So it's a very specific piece of surveying done by academics, and journalists depend an awful lot on academic surveys. This one's remarkable. Because of its basic I don't know. It carries a surprise, and all journalists like something new. And the surprise in this is that it concerns Fox and Fox viewers being subjected to a very interesting psychological experiment. Pardon my laughter about this, but it's a very serious-minded survey carried out by researchers at Yale and at Berkeley. They claim, and I quote, despite, and reading from the review, from the study itself, the executive summary, despite regular Fox viewers being largely strong partisans, we found manifold effects, that's academic speak for many effects, I think, of changing the slant of their media diets, the effect that that has on their factual beliefs, attitudes, perceptions of issues of importance, and overall political views. In other words, Marshall, even diehard right-wing attitudes that are widespread among habitual Fox viewers, as we know, they changed when their news diet changed. What happened here, the trick, if I can call it that, was that these researchers took several hundred Fox viewers and paid them, in fact, $15 an hour. That's the New York City minimum wage, and a dollar more than the New York minimum wage in Connecticut, to watch CNN as a change for 7 hours a week. and they surveyed the effect of this. I wish I'd been paid $15 an hour for all the Fox News that I've had to watch, but in this case, they were watching CNN news, and as they surveyed their attitudes as viewers and as political choice makers, it became noticeable after only 3 days that their attitudes changed. I find that remarkable. And indeed. Counterintuitive and counter to my own anecdotal experience, of course, as a television program maker, I've been also all too aware over the years that whatever you produce and put on television, people of set views will keep to those set views and will take from the television reporting they see exactly what they want to take. I.e., they take a view that their own views are being confirmed in some way, but this Yale and Berkeley survey suggests otherwise. Clearly, it's one of those instances where much more work has to be done, but it's a very intriguing result that we're being presented with here.
I want to move on to the Chief Justice. He made some pretty amazing statements over the course of the past couple of days. First of all, accusing Supreme Court justices of, quote, turning judges into advice columnists.
yes, indeed.
He's been struggling for a while to keep the level and the public's respect of the Supreme Court up. And you don't have to agree with every ruling that he's voted on, but it's been so evident he's been struggling with the entire conception of what the Supreme Court has looked at now. And for the Supreme Court, for the head guy in the Supreme Court to talk like this is simply amazing. It's never happened before.
Yes, Chief Justice Roberts has got a problem on his hands. I mean, he's presiding over a supermajority of conservatives versus liberals, 6-3 now, and as I was saying before, that overall balance is unchanged by Ketanji Brown Jackson becoming the first black female justice and a liberal, of course. So the image of the court in the public view is something that Roberts is very evidently very concerned about, and the dignity of the court and its integrity has come under question too. Of course, we have the very disturbing developments being highlighted over the last couple of weeks of one of the older justices, Clarence Thomas. His wife, an independent entity in her own right, of course, Ginny Ginny Thomas, but a well-known activist in the cause of trying to overturn, quite simply, the 2020 election. She's one of these election fraud enthusiasts, and has made use of her elevated position to organize with the Trump White House, as she did, to further that overturning effort. And that, of course, is not good for the image of the bench. Although, as I say, every spouse is entitled to do whatever they like in theory. But of course, the appearance of partiality on the bench is something that that needs to be avoided too. And that's a great an abiding, or previously was abiding, tradition of the highest court in the land. What he's facing now, of course, is a ever increasing and sharpening, brightening spotlight on the members of the highest court in the land, and individually they come under the spotlight, of course, and get asked a lot of quite silly things sometimes. They get invitations to speak at events, and each one is an individual and will make their own individual decision about where to go, where to speak, and what to say. But he's got the job of wrangling these nine individuals, and he's not finding it very easy. But the degree and to some extent the impatience, very evident in his in what he's been saying over the last few days, is evidence of real deep concern, and I think it's a justified concern, and you don't have to agree with John Roberts in his judgment making record not to share his concern for what's happening to the Supreme Court of the United States. It needs to, hold the respect and maintain the respect of the American people. When the Chief Justice himself is as worried as he evidently is about that, I think we all need to be worried too.
David, it's always great to speak to you. We'll check with you next week from Europe, and we'll get the view from Europe about what's going on in Ukraine and the United States and the rest of the world.
You will. I look forward to that.
Take care. David Terechuk and the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. You can find David at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on David Terechuk, the Media Beat, or at his website, which is themediabeat.us.